Chapter 11, please. We overlook the things in our life that the Lord is not happy with. May tonight you bless, may you give us insight, I ask, and I ask this in Christ's name. Amen. You may be seated. For me, to look back on my youth can be quite painful. To truly understand my youth can be both difficult and painful. I don't know when the problem started, but for me, my big problem started. Are you all listening? Parents, I want to speak to you directly too. My big problem started between 7th and 8th grade. I would think, but before 7th grade, I was a pretty typical boy. I was a goofball. I liked baseball. I liked softball. I liked wrestling, fighting, playing, running, playing in the woods. I liked all of that. But 7th and 8th grade, and by the way, what's the worst time for a child? I wish Tim was here. What's the worst time for a child's life? You wish you could take a 7th and 8th grader, put them in a box, and skip over about 3 years. It all happened for me in between my 7th and 8th grade year. Up until that time, I was a fairly average kid. I had gotten saved at age 9, baptized at age 11, but I was ignorant of the scripture. I never read the Bible. I wasn't in a good Bible preaching. It was in a Bible preaching church, but there was no depth there. I was immature. In every way, I was immature. And I will confess. I'm going to get to this in the notes in a little bit. You don't have to write it down now. Somewhere around 7th and 8th grade, my entire life, I was dying to be liked by girls. That summer, 7th grade summer, after 7th grade, I went to a family reunion on my father's side, the Herrings, and I went to that family reunion every year. There would be a lot of people. I don't know the exact amount. I'm going to guess 150 200. It was on my dad's side. I come from big families on both sides, so there was lots of people there. And for the first time, I mean, I always went there, and most of them were my dad's mother's family, and she had 24 in the family. There were 24 kids in one family. You got to think about that one. Three wives, one of them had 19, one of them had two or three, and the other one had a couple, and there was a bunch of people. But that summer, after 7th grade, I went to a family reunion, the Herring reunion, and I met a new cousin that I had never met. And my cousin was everything I wasn't. Do you all know what that feels like? I want to say again, those two girls impressed me. They're not here tonight. Don't look at them. They're with their family. They're from France. Those two girls impressed me more this morning than they have the entire time I've known them. They brought a young lady in close. I understand what it's like to feel like an outsider. And I also understand the stupid things people will do in order to feel like an insider. Do you? Can you remember back to those days? I met my cousin. He was a third cousin. He was a son of one of my dad's favorite cousins, a lady named Willie. I didn't know her. And Doug was everything I wasn't in the end of 7th grade. This was the apex of the hippie movement. This would have been somewhere in that late 60s, somewhere in there. He was a male. He was somewhere in his early 20s. He was good looking. He was big. He had hair to the middle of his back, which today you would laugh at, but in the 1960s, no young person was laughing. That's what you wanted to look like. You wanted to be cool like him. He drove into the family reunion on a 1200 Harley, he and a buddy. They each had 1200 Harleys. They drove in, and I'm looking around at all these old people, and there was a bunch of old people there that had no idea that a teenager had any feelings or desires. He drove in, and on his back of his Harley was a good-looking woman. So here was a guy that was everything I wasn't. He was cool. He was 6'2", same height I am now. Long hair. He fit right in the hippie era. He had long sideburns, riding a 1200 Harley chopper. He had a beauty on his back, a woman riding behind him. A friend rode in with him. I found out later he was into music. And I mean, he was into music. He was a bass player, a very good one. He played in 3 or 4 major rock bands that Mike would know about. He was the real thing. And here's little Ralph Warren from up in the country. Didn't know how to look at a girl, didn't know how to talk to a girl, didn't think I was anything. And by the way, guys in the back, I wasn't much, about the same as you, not much. When I see a teenager doing stupid things, you look at me, they're not doing stupid things because they think they're cool. They're trying to put on a persona. Adults, don't you know where it comes from? We're trying to do some things so that the other people think we're whatever. Nobody wakes up one day and thinks, I think my hair needs to be pink. Nobody does that. But if they think being pink will make them cool, yeah, we'll do it. We didn't do the pink thing. We let our hair grow long. You see, how long did your hair get? As long as I could get it. Now I come to the hard part of the story. We're at a park, that family reunion, late 1960s. Doug and his buddy pull in on 1,200 Harleys. And here is Ralph Warren, and I don't understand this till this day. Doug, my third cousin, walked up to me. I had never met him before, and he talked to me and liked me. He not only came up and talked to me, he invited me to come along with them. I'm some kid from the country. I don't even know how to, you know, hardly how to shave yet. He says, why don't you come with us? We went for a long walk in this park. He and his buddy, his girlfriend at the time, 2 men, 1 woman, and me. We got out in the park. In between 7th and 8th grade, he introduced me to whatever term you want to use. Marijuana, weed, pot, Mary Jane, whatever term you use. I was between 7th and 8th grade. Do you think I wanted to smoke pot? Didn't even know what it was. But I knew one thing. I wanted to be cool. Hello? We got parents right here in our church that are so oblivious to their own children because they're home watching television tonight. That's real important. You say, did you participate? Well, he had a bottle of wine. He had several joints. I can just tell you that I did take, and I'm going to speak technically because I know Ron knows about this. I took several tokes off the joint. And if you don't know what a toke is, God bless you. You say, did you inhale? That's the point. Anyone that says something else is a liar. See, you guys are too old. Some of you don't even get this. You don't even understand why some of your children as adults still act like they're teenagers. Because they still don't know who they are. Then the strangest thing of all, I started seeing Doug every 2 or 3 months. He drove over to our farm. He still liked me. Second time I saw him, he's from St. Charles, Missouri. I'm from across 3 rivers. You got to cross the Missouri, the Mississippi, and the Illinois to get where I'm from because they all come together. He comes over to our farm with another hottie on the back. And I'm like, I got to be like this guy. And the way to be like that guy is to smoke pot with him. I saw him off and on for the next couple of years. And I will say this, from 7th grade till I got into the United States Navy, I was a stumble-down fool for some very simple reasons. I have them in your notes. I don't mind sharing them. Because I'm going to guess when I look around at some of our young guys look at me. Is it not obvious to you that we have guys in this church that don't know who they are? Then why do you think they're rebels? Look at me. They're not rebels. They're the opposite of a rebel. They're a conformist. You treat them as a rebel. They're not rebelling. They're trying to be cool, just like I was. Get a life. But if a parent's watching television instead of talking with their kids, they would never know. And God knows, TV is more important than your children. Well, in your notes. I could talk more about this guy, by the way. I bet you I saw him 10 times over a period of 2 years. And this man always was nice to me. And treated me and talked to me. While I had a father that never talked to me. And my mother didn't get the generation stuff. You say, what was driving the engine in your notes? Here are the cause and effect in my life. First of all, a desire to fit in. Do most people have that desire, yes or no? Some of us more than others. Secondly, and maybe these are all the same, a desire to be accepted and even cool, or whatever term we use these days. You know, I could really date myself. We wanted to be hip. We wanted to be groovy. We wanted, all that stupid stuff. And by the way, the words makes no difference. Now, let me ask you a question. Look back here. You got these two lovely young ladies. You got Brenna and you got Carly. They're almost perfect. Do I think these things affect those kind of girls? Yes. Do I think they're as driven as I was by it? No. I think part of it is they have better parents. Number two, they have better friends than I had. Number three, they're much more mature than I was. You understand what that means? I'm not going to point anybody out, but when I look around teenagers, some of you don't see what I see. When I see a kid walk in here, a guy walk in, he doesn't know how to dress, and he's fixing his hair pink, folks, don't think he likes pink hair. He's crying out. Hey, he's crying out. Well, that's right, you're asleep. Time to go home. Watch some television. Yeah. I will confess, a desire to be liked by girls. You say, that's very wicked, Pastor Warren. What would you prefer, a desire to be liked by males? We now have churches, even fundamental churches, that have got done away with all sports so the guys can grow up in the church and they're all a bunch of weenies. There's something worse than being... Now, you say, please look at me. As an adult, I am 61. I have seen my cousin Doug one time since I was probably in ninth grade. One time. I was pastoring in St. Louis. I went back to the family reunion. There's Doug. Hadn't seen him in 2.5, 3 decades, I see him, and my first thought was, he is not nearly as cool as he used to look. He was bald, and he looked like an old man. But when I was 12, 13, 14 years old, he was the cause of me being stupid. Look at me, because he brought me in, accepted me, and was nice to me. Just, you would think he was one of my friends. So, I'm going to go back to the notes. We're going to look at cause and effect. These two beautiful girls here, and not just, they're not here tonight, and this one over here, that welcomed this little Navajo girl, did more for me as a pastor than some of you have done in your entire time here. You ought to have seen the two girls today begging Aton, because remember, Jenny Lynn's family is from France, and they had to meet with them, and the two girls wanted to be there for that young girl. That young girl now knows she has some friends in Illinois. That means something to me. You say, why? Because I know what it's like to be dying for friends. Now, you say, how did you get over this? I'm not going to preach on this. I'll just say it this way. In the United States Navy, when I knew it was either follow God or go to hell, and I don't mean that literally, but in life, when God got a hold of my life, I got where I don't care what anybody thinks of me. And at 61, I'm pretty much still there. But when I was 16, 15 years old, it was, do they like me? Do you think there's kids in our church and school like that? Adults, what are you going to do differently? I'm asking you a question. By the way, they don't need a buddy. They need a real adult that's interested in them in a proper way to encourage them in a proper way. That's what they need. Yes, in your notes. We're going to go through some introductory thoughts to this whole text and this issue that we're looking at tonight of roots and fruits. Proverbs 26, verse 2 is, of course, one of those verses. As the bird by wandering and the swallow by flying, so the curse, the King James says causeless, we can translate that with the same ideas, the curse without a cause shall not come. You're never going to find problems without something causing those problems. Can I say it again? You don't find problems without something causing the problems. So when you see something, don't look around and say, wonder where this happened. How did this? I actually had a woman tell me years ago, I'll get to it later. She looked at me and she says, I just don't even know what to say to my children. And I looked at her and said, that's the problem with your kids. Because she's acting like, I don't know where these kids come from. Well, they are what you have allowed them to become. Proverbs 30, verse 33, this is one of my favorite verses. This sounds like right out of the Stooges. Surely the churning of milk bringeth forth butter, and the wringing of the nose bringeth forth blood. There is a cause and effect, so the forcing of wrath bringeth forth strife. Lamentations 2:14, now this is a warning verse. This is after the exile. This is after the destruction of Jerusalem. The prophets, Jeremiah says, have seen vain and foolish things for thee, and they have not discovered thine iniquity to turn away thy captivity, but have seen for thee false burdens and obviously false causes of banishment. So the prophets were saying, you're going into exile for all the wrong reasons. They didn't get it. And of course, the verse we dealt with on a Wednesday night, we'll deal with again. Judge not according to appearance. You need to learn to judge a righteous judgment. Now, friend, what we're going to do tonight is go through these quickly. Next week, we're going to get into, look at me, why did David do what he did? We're going to look at cause and effect. We need to. All right, we'll start with this. Here are some introductory thoughts. First of all, there is cause and effect. It's just that simple. The curse without a cause doesn't come. If you churn milk that has fat in it, it's going to bring forth butter. I mean, these are things that follow. Secondly, and this is the harder part, there are usually causes and effects, plural, on both. So oftentimes, there's many things that lead to this sin. We'll get to it in David's life in a moment. Number three, effects don't just happen. Wow. My child is a liar. Why would your child be a liar? By the way, why would any child be a liar? Give me a reason. Anybody over on this side, why would a child be a liar? Because from birth, every child has a bent to lying. And secondly, I'm guessing mom and dad either are liars themselves or they're not willing to do what's necessary to corral the lying. And by the way, lying is that's a war. See, you can put up with a lot of things, but you can't put up with lying because that's a fundamental one. So you have a child that lies all the time, and you say, wonder why they lie. Please, please. I better move on, I'll get in trouble. Number four, causes are often difficult to discern. They're often difficult to discern, especially in oneself. It's easier to think you understand why other people have problems than yourself. Usually with yourself, you are oblivious. This woman that told me about child rearing looked at me and she said, Pastor Warren, I don't know what to say to my children. And I'm standing back thinking, well, I know lots of things you could do. You could start obeying the word of God. But for her mind, my children just appeared somehow. And I remember talking to her and thinking, come on. Your son eats in his bedroom. The daughter eats in her bedroom. The husband watches television while you stress out in the kitchen. The first thing we do is we turn off everything. By the way, are your children and grandchildren living like that? And the answer for some of you is no. And you can't figure out why there's a problem. For some reason, when we look at ourselves, we can see nothing. First thing I do, turn everything off. Have conversations. My goodness. Talk. Quit listening to nonsense. But, oh, Pastor Warren, that's hard. doesn't have to be a forced conversation. It can be a fun conversation. There should be as much laughter in your home as anything else, frankly. I like laughter. Laugh all the time. I'm sure, by the way, just so you know, my daughter is not only mean to me, just so you know, she told my mother about this. So my mother knew about this baby before I did. And my mother thought it was funny. Oh, my mother. In your notes. Then Adonijah, the son of Haggith, exalted himself. David is about to die, by the way. Saying, I will be king. And he prepared him chariots and horsemen and 50 men to run before him. And then the author of the text says, oh, by the way, his father, meaning David, had not displeased him at any time. You see a kid that can't do right, can't get a job, can't get out of bed, can't get out of their mom's basement, and you're saying, wonder why that is. Probably David had no idea, but the author of Scripture did. David never disciplined his children, ever. Period. By the way, Adonijah was Absalom's brother. What happened to Absalom? He got killed. What happens to this one? He gets killed. It all comes back to David. Wasn't the father. But I don't know that David ever got that. I don't know that he ever figured it out. I'm going to give you the first story first, and I'm not going to talk about Thursday nights because of time. The first year I was in St. Louis, this would have been 1988, so that's a long time ago, 30 years ago. It was either the first year or the second year. My wife and I drove down to meet a family that came to the church. Their names was J and M. They were and are, as far as I know, a lovely couple. At that time, they seemed old. They were probably 50s. That seems young now, doesn't it? Jenny and I drove down, stopped at their house, close to Eureka, if you've ever been through where the Great America is on 44, it's in that area. Drove down to their house. They invited us. We stayed outside. It was a nice night. We stayed out, talked, and I don't know, it seemed like we drank tea or something. I don't know. Had a nice conversation. I will promise you, if they showed up in this church tonight, you would immediately like them. They're one of the most likable people you've ever met, both husband and wife. He's happy. He's smiling. He's kind. When he came to our church, he tithed. He voted. He was positive for anything we wanted to do. Everything was great, except one thing. 3 out of 4 Sundays, they had a trailer behind a truck, and they went out of town 3 out of 4 Sundays a week, a month, Saturday and Sunday. 3 out of 4. Yes? Am I telling the truth? 3 out of 4. When we left there, they were getting older, and it was only maybe 2 to 3 out of 4. Now, Kirk told me recently he don't think they do that anymore because they're too old. They're in probably their late 70s, and they're our 80s, and they're not capable. But they were nice people. But 3 out of 4 Sundays a month, they were gone. But when they came, you'd think they'd never missed a Sunday. They were part of our church. They tithed when they were there. They gave. They sang. They were happy. In the conversation, my wife was there. And by the way, like the people. In the conversation, the mom and dad got serious one part. And they said they had 2 daughters. I never met them. They looked at us and said something to this effect. Our daughters won't come to church. And they looked at me as sincere as some of you are and said, I don't understand why our children won't come to church. Hey, cause you don't go to church? May I say this? I guarantee you, if they're still alive, and I think both of them are, they still don't know why their daughters aren't saved. Because they didn't pray with their mom and dad. They saw their mom and dad 3 out of 4 Sundays and sometimes 4. Out of town. By the way, their mom and dad was not sinning. They were not evil people. They were nice people. Do you know what? They couldn't figure out cause and effect in their own family. They just couldn't. The person's looking at you saying, I don't know why they won't go to church. That would be like me saying to my daughter, I said, I don't know why you don't speak Chinese. Well, nobody else speaks Chinese in my family. We're oblivious. Let me ask you, are you oblivious? No, I'm going to ask you, are you oblivious to yourself? Because I already know we're good at moral equivalence. I'll talk about that in future weeks. Let's skip down to the fifth point. False causes are always a danger. I didn't preach this morning primarily for anybody else, but sometimes Christians can come alongside younger Christians and tell them the solution to all your problems. And you know what's sad? Sometimes they say things that are just moronic. Your daughter shouldn't cut her hair. I've heard that one. Your daughter shouldn't wear open-toed shoes. I've heard several pastors in the Philippines preach those sermons. And if you don't wear open-toed shoes, your daughters will be spiritual. In your notes, false causes are always a danger. 2 Samuel 11, and by the way, we'll get here next week, but the question, why did David do what he did? It says it came to pass after the year was expired at the time when kings go forth to battle. So let's ask this question, where was David supposed to be? Thank you. It's going to help you answer a question. That David did what? Instead of doing it himself, he sent Joab and his servants with him and all of Israel, and they did a number on these people, but at the end it says, oh, by the way, David tarried still at Jerusalem. And it came to pass at eventide. Now, eventide, they didn't have stopwatches, but it's probably 4, 5, or 6 o'clock, because about 6 o'clock the sun goes down. So it was sometime when the sun was still up, but close to sun going down. It says, David arose off from his bed, walked upon the roof of the king's house, and from the roof he saw a woman washing herself, and the woman was very beautiful to look upon. Probably 15 years ago, my wife went to a meeting, and I'm going to say where it was, so if it makes you angry, good. Went to a meeting at Camp Joy and brought me back a pamphlet. And the pamphlet I have upstairs, this is not your religion. It's called, are you listening, The Sin of Bathsheba. And it's a nasty book. It hasn't anything to do with the Bible, but why would we have pamphlets to do with the Bible? Basically said this, if a woman does everything right, men don't have problems. So the whole burden of everything is on? Now, I'm going to challenge you. I'm going to challenge you. Do you know who you is? Find in the Bible where it says that Bathsheba sinned. Now, this is going to require thought. Next page. I asked the question, who was at fault? According to this dumb little pamphlet, Bathsheba was. She was naked. But I'm going to give you some basic thoughts. The first one, I will explain a little bit. First, thoughts. Bathsheba in the story is what's called a flat character. David is what's called a round character. And you say, Pastor Warren, I've never heard that. Well, you're going to tonight. Please look at me. In the story of David and Bathsheba, please look up here, there is nothing said that reveals anything about the internal thoughts of Bathsheba. She's a flat character in the literature. Doesn't give her motives, doesn't give her thoughts. It simply says these things happened. Got it? It's called a flat. By the way, there is an exception to this for you that actually read the Bible. You go to 1 Kings chapter 1. When Adonijah is rebelling, and the prophet comes to Bathsheba, in chapter 1, she's a round character. Because it starts talking about her motivation. You better go talk to the king. You better get the king to appoint, you know. So you get information. But in this story, Bathsheba, we don't know anything about her other than what happened. The only person's motives that we find are David's. He's the round character. Now, if you're not used to literary theory, that's okay. Let's go on to the second idea. Bathsheba's motivations are unknown. We don't know anything about why she did what she did. Period. So anything you say means you're reading your own motives into her motives. Doesn't say anything about Bathsheba's motives. By the way, at the end of the chapter, it says the thing that David did displeased the Lord. Didn't talk about Bathsheba. I'm not saying what she did was right, but we don't know anything. We just know what happened. And David was the king, and he did send men there to take her. That could have been politely. It could have been, come with us. I don't know. Doesn't tell us. Next. Bathsheba was bathing. And normally at a bath, you are in what condition? So I'm reading a book on the sin of Bathsheba, and I'm thinking, I got to be careful because we got little kids. What would you expect when you take a shower? Do you take a shower with clothes on? Are we retards? When I read that article, it was recommended by, I'm going to speak direct truth, by Charlie Hatchett. It reminds me of what Muslims do. Women, you cover up from here to the floor. But I'm going to ask you a question. In the history of mankind, or I'm not going to ask, I'm going to state it, the greatest rape culture in history is Muslim culture. And women are covered from here to here. Why? Because rape is not looking at women. Rape is where? It's in your brain and in your cover up. My goodness. Now we got places where women in the Muslim world, they can't even hardly see out of these little things. Oh, don't you know, women's eyes might allure a man. Okay. Bathsheba's motives are unknown. Bathsheba was bathing. And normally in a bath, you are, well, I'm thinking, most of us. Next. Here's where some of you that actually read the Bible would take that pamphlet and burn it. If you read the Bible, Bathsheba was bathing at a time when David wasn't supposed to be home. Is that correct? Would the people in Israel have known that there was a time kings go out to war? Yes or no? So as far as Bathsheba, she's just taking care of her normal business. David's supposed to be gone because the king's supposed to be out to war. And do most of us, well, I hope you take a shower every day. I've met a few people who don't, but hopefully you do. And, you know, I'm assuming it was time to take her, maybe it was a Timba Atabo. I don't know. She was bending down the dipper. I don't know what it was, but she went out to do what you normally do. Do you all agree with that? Next. Bathsheba was bathing not only at a time when David wasn't supposed to be there, she was also bathing at a time when David wasn't supposed to be sleeping. Normally, you're not sleeping at 5:30 at night. Yes or no? Now, I'm very cynical about this because this pamphlet drove me to just anger. The foolishness that we put on women are evil and men are good, basically. By the way, it's the Me Too movement in reverse. Me Too movement, all men are evil. In some Christian circles, all women are evil. It's like, women, ladies, you have responsibilities. Men, you do too. Wow. So do we agree that she was bathing in a time when David was supposed to be out to war? Yes or no? Do you get the logic? Yes or no? Do you agree that she was bathing in a time that she wouldn't have assumed somebody would be getting up? Wandering around on the roof. You know, most people don't get up at 6 o'clock at night or 5:30. I say very cynically, unless we posit Bathsheba, and Frenchie, you didn't correct this. Frenchie. Unless we posit, Frenchie got caught up on the word posit. He didn't know what the word meant. Unless we posit or assume or presume that Bathsheba knew or had David's calendar, do you think she knew his calendar? So then why in the world are you blaming Bathsheba for bathing? Answer the question. She's bathing at a time David's not supposed to be there, and he's not supposed to be sleeping, and she's doing normal things people do. You say, what was she up on the roof for? Do you think they had three bathrooms in their house with showers? People did business on top of houses. That's where you lived. It was too hot. My goodness, blame women. Plus, in your notes, David is responsible for David. Can I hear an amen from the males? David is responsible for whom? Guys, David is responsible for whom? Who are you responsible for, gentlemen? Yourself. Don't come to me and say, that girl, she's wearing, first of all, ladies, I like it when you, most women in here dress modestly. A girl has to be really immodest for me to notice. I'm hoping you're not checking out girls to figure out who's not. What's wrong with your perverted mind? Yes, we used to have a person in this church that told me from prison these exact words. I mentally undressed every woman I met. You say, what is that? That's called a pervert. That's a Billy Baptist. And there's lots of Billy Baptist. But if you're one of those, you're in the wrong spot. First of all, you need to get saved. And number two, you need to get your mind cleaned up. Titus, unto the pure, what? When I look at a Christian woman, when I look at one of our young ladies, I look at them in the same place. Same thing I do this morning when little Abu and Mia came to me. I tell them, they're way down here. I say, look at me, because I want to look at the young ladies. I don't want to be checking them out. If I catch you checking them out, we'll have a problem. This is a Christian church. And unto the pure, all things are pure. Within limits, things shouldn't even bother a man. Which means, young men, if I find out you're in pornography, hell's coming to your house. Because I know what that's going to do. And you say, why did David commit this horrible sin? Are you listening, young men in the back? And I'm not accusing either one of you. I'm just stating this as facts for young men. David has spent a long time devaluing women. You play a game of women are just objects, you're liable to do anything. It doesn't, oh, wait a minute. That just happened. No, it didn't. The man that told me that he mentally undressed every woman he met, by the way, one of your deacons before I came here, he also told me his dad was a Baptist deacon in Michigan, and his dad had stacks of Playboys, and he would look at them his whole life. Devalued women from childhood. Women were objects. Okay, I better move on. I think David had that problem too. Unto the pure, all things are pure. But unto them that are defiled and unbelieving is nothing pure. Which means there's no way you can dress modestly enough to take a pig out of the pig thoughts. So ladies, look at me. Dress modestly according to the Bible. But you can't take a pig. A pig is a pig. You're not going to fix that. Only God can fix that. Wow. He says, but even their mind and conscience is defiled. They profess that they know God, but in works they deny him, being abominable and disobedient, and to every good work reprobate. Well, David is responsible for David. I have more to say, but I'm going to skip because of time. Look down at number 6. False causes, when or while judging others, is the norm. We always know why people did what they did, right? Right? Usually we don't. Number 7. Now, men, I don't know everybody in this room. Some of you have been saved later. But frankly, religious talk don't really impress me much because I've been around people too long. It doesn't take you too long to figure out what guys are thinking about. But there's some good news. So I'm going to speak this to anybody that's been saved recently. Are you ready? There's some really good news about cause and effect. God is not a bully in heaven trying to smash you. So here's the good news. We're going to read these verses together and conclude this introduction. God's amazing grace can. Doesn't mean he has to. God's amazing grace can mitigate and even, at least in some cases, eliminate much cause and effect. God's amazing grace can mitigate, which means maybe make less intense, not as bad. It can mitigate and even eliminate much cause and effect. Romans 5:20 says this, moreover, the law entered that the offense might abound. But where sin abounded, grace did what? Gentlemen, look at me. If you have lived your life doing wrong, thinking wrong, living wrong, and acting wrong, here's the good news. God's grace is a whole lot bigger than your sin. God can take that garbage out of your mind. I remember it. By the way, my struggle in the Navy, my first struggle, is strange. I smoked pot and drank beer November 1975. It's been so long. Smoking pot and beer was gone in one day. God took that away from me. But the mind took a lot longer. So no male will ever come. By the way, if you come to me and say, I never had these problems, remember, there's only three kinds of males. There's only three kinds of males that don't have problems with women. Dead males and liars. Which one are you? But there's a beautiful thing. God can clean your mind up. Did you know that? You can learn to meditate when you go to bed at night. You know, somebody's been preaching on that, Dada or somebody. When you go to bed, your last thought can be your first thought. You can start cleansing your mind. I remember memorizing Philippians, and at the end of the book of Philippians, I realized for the first time I could control my thoughts. Unbelievable. And I could still control my thoughts. 1 Peter 4. As every man hath received the gift, so even so minister the same to one another. As good stewards of the manifold grace of God. This is one of those few words, it's actually quite a few, that's found in laboratory medicine. It's a rare word, but look at me, and only because I like it. We had a poikilocyte. Your red blood cells are normally, they're like this, and they're concave when you look at them under a microscope. Certain disease states cause them to look other ways. There's many disease states. There's hemoglobinopathies, like hemoglobin, what's it called? My mind is not, hemoglobin S that causes what? African Americans have it. Sickle cell, there you go. There's a bunch of other hemoglobinopathies, but one weird thing that happens once in a while, because of some, I think it's kidney problems, instead of having this nice semi, you know, kind of circular, but not exactly circular, concave, it will look like somebody stuck thorns in here. And there'll be things sticking out all over this red cell. We call that a poikilocyte. You say, why? It's the same word. Manifold means there's lots of places. So here's the great, look at me, here's the grace of God. You got all these problems. You've done stuff wrong. God's grace can get into every spot, no matter where it's at. He can wash you clean. He can give you a new life. Let me ask you, do you want it? Or do you want to go on living like a pig? Men, when a man that's been in this church went to a Christian college, a deacon in this church tells me, I mentally undressed every woman I ever met. That means for decades he had been in churches where pastors did not know him or did not confront him. You're not in that church. 1 Peter 5. But the God of what? All I want to do tonight is say some basic things. First of all, there's cause and effect. David's sin didn't come from the sky. There's usually causes and effects, and we'll talk about that next week. There were multiple causes. Effects don't just happen. Unfortunately, causes are difficult to discern, especially in oneself. We're good at judging other people, terrible at looking at ourselves. False causes are always a danger. We see things that aren't there. I was going to talk about Pokemon tonight, but I will restrain. Because two of the worst families that ever came in this church, both a husband and a wife, came to me and asked me to preach a series on Pokemon. One of them had so much bitterness, bitterness dripped. There was a path of bitterness behind her. And the male was so lazy that he put me to sleep looking at him. I think they had bigger sins. Pokemon. 6, false causes, when or while judging others is the norm. And the beauty is God's amazing grace can mitigate. Hey, look at me. You just get saved recently? There's some good news. Get on board. Let God cleanse you up. Let God clean you up. Let God fix you. Let God lead you. Work with God's people. You know what's beautiful? Sometimes God totally eliminates the stupid you did and gives you and your family a beautiful future. That's our prayer. Father, thank you for this text. It's